You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Third and one. At the 23-yard line, Tanner again to the outside and without his helmet.
Look at everybody on the sideline. That's what you love to see in a young player. He has kept fighting all night long. Helmet comes off. I guarantee you the defense was still playing. Arkin got a little shot down the field. That one will be remembered by Jason Garrett and company.
Hello, Cowboys Nation. Welcome to another episode of the Writer's Block podcast on this Victory Tuesday, because it's a victory week here in Cowboys Nation. We don't stop celebrating after a win, especially over the Washington Commanders. I'm here with my co-host, Brandon Laurie. Brandon, it's that time of week again. I missed you, my friend, but we are joined by somebody else who we are just so excited to have on the show. And you may or may not know him as the beast, the man, the myth, the legend, Philip Tanner. Philip PT, we are so excited to have you. Thank you so, so much for joining us today. We are just like elated to talk to you about football.
Yeah, I'm definitely excited to be here, man. I love talking ball. As you can see, every Sunday, whenever the Cowboys playing, I'm like live tweeting the entire game.
Yeah.
You know, I just I love the team. I love the organization. I love everything. I love the fan base. I love everything about them.
Well, you know what? You came to the right podcast, because so do we, and we love talking all things Dallas Cowboys football, and it's just so much easier that we're talking after a win. So for those of you that don't know maybe a little bit about PT, PT, give us a background, a little background scope of yours, because we have so much to cover, but I want them to know like how incredible you are with everything you're about to say. You're about to give some really good insight. And PT has a very well-renowned moment in his career that I'll let him get into. But go ahead, tell the people all about you, and don't even be humble about it. Brag away, my friend.
I definitely appreciate those words, for sure. Again, I'm a Dallas native, you know, from Dallas, grew up in Dallas, worked Texas Stadium, you know, and the Deion Sanders days and all of the glory days, as Jerry called them. So I worked Texas Stadium concession stands. And then, you know, 2011 lockout year, I was able to have an opportunity to go out and make this football team. And it was in San Antonio. It was tough. It was rough. It was right after the lockout year. So it wasn't the glitz and glamour. It wasn't a rookie preseason. It wasn't rookie mini camps. It was get a phone call on Monday, get to San Antonio on Wednesday, you know, and that was one of the most brutal training camps. You never saw the sun, you know, because we was at the Hyatt, you know, you got on the bus under the hotel, then you went to Alamo Dome, which was indoors, you know, but it was a humbling experience, and it taught me so much about, you know, the game of football and also the Dallas Cowboy organization. So making that team and playing 3-4 years in Dallas and getting close with Jason Garrett and the organization, and one thing about the Cowboys is they take care of their players, you know. So to be able to play for the organization for as long as I did, and then to leave and go into a couple more years with San Francisco and Buffalo, but I always wanted to go into coaching. Started coaching on college level, then had a little small time in high school. Then to get a call from Jason Garrett to tell me he wanted me to come back and coach on his coaching staff was truly amazing, you know. And it just goes to show the character of Jason Garrett, but also the character of I myself was kind of on display, because regardless of the business, regardless of me not resigning in Dallas and me not playing 15 years, because fans feel that a player never should, you know, get released or never should get to not resign at a team, but it's the business. It's all a business. So to be able to differentiate or see the difference between the business side and also the personal side between the player and that relationship me and Coach Garrett still have to this day is unbelievable. And it just speaks to not only him, but just the organization with Dallas Cowboys, because it starts from the top. You know, Jerry Jones does it too, how he still can walk around hand in hand with Dez Bryant, you know, and that's his just go to guy. So it just goes to show how much of a true person, the true character of not only Jerry Jones, but everybody in the Dallas Cowboys organization. So again, it's hard not to be a fan of the team, regardless of the ups, downs, who's sitting in the head coaching seat or not. You know, the same way it was, the emotional way of Coach Garrett not signing, you know, JG not coming back and JG leaving that organization. And it was the first time in Cowboys history that it wasn't a Garrett on staff, you know, and we talked about that from him, his dad, his brothers, the scouting department. So again, it's a very family oriented atmosphere from the owner to the custodial staff to the cafeteria works, the maze. I mean, everything there is so family oriented, and that's what, you know, I enjoy about this football team.
Yeah, it truly is an honor, PT. I know we talked about it pre-show. I'm a big fan of yours. Like I said, the year that you came into the league was the year I really took sports journalism, started to look at it on a serious level. And one thing I've always admired about former players is when you guys get into coaching after your career, because I think that it shows a sign of commitment not only to the community, but to be a leader of men. And now that you're, you know, a head football coach of, I believe it is Southwest High School in Fort Worth, you know, to be able to get that opportunity, how has that been for you to be a head coach and now to be in the shoes of someone like a JG, a Mike McCarthy, and look at it from another side?
Yeah, I will say one thing is, if you ever want to stop coaching football, become a head coach. You do. I mean, it's everything except coaching now, you know, but it's truly an honor, man. I've always wanted to go into the coaching side. So being under guys like a Jason Garrett, you know, and learning what I would do that JG would do, but also at the same time, things I would do differently from JG, you know, as well as being under guys even like Rick Stockstill, my head coach at Middle Tennessee, just their personalities and how they go about the business of coaching. And then again, it's Texas high school football, and it's a different world in Texas, you know. So if you look at it, I can just name off four guys from that Cowboys organization. Three are head coaches now. I, myself, Jason Witten, John Kitna, and then we got Jumbo Joe Looney has just jumped into to the coaching world in Texas as well. So Texas high school football is very respectable, and it's truly an honor to be in such a members-only club. And that was one of those things I wanted to definitely be around the game. I wanted to definitely be around the game at a high level. And Texas high school football, it gives me all of that. It still gives me the time that I need to spend with my daughters as well. So it's truly an honor to be in this atmosphere, in this career. And I wouldn't change it for the world.
And you know what I love? I was reading some articles that were done on you. And at one point you said, I wanted to go from being successful to being significant. Yeah. And I think that just speaks volumes about your character, who you are as a person and as a coach. So I think those kids are so, so lucky to have you to look after. And you're essentially becoming their Jason Garrett, like he is definitely to you. So I think that's beautiful. So again, if you didn't know who PT was, you do now. And he is amazing. And there's a great reason why we have him on the podcast. He's a good guy. And he has some fire tweets. If you don't follow him on Twitter, you definitely should. So, hey, you know what? We're talking all things Cowboys football. And I want to get your initial reaction. How do you think the Cowboys played so far in the season? And what was something that really stood out to you about this Commanders game with the team as a whole, you know, whether it be specifics, offensively, defensively, special teams? Give me the rundown on what you're seeing so far with the team this season.
Man, one thing I will say with the team I'm seeing this year, it's you can tell the chemistry and the closeness in that locker room. I will say that. And just speaking of when I played in Dallas, we weren't that close. And you could just kind of tell on the field at times, and that's no shade to anyone, anything like that. That's just being brutally honest. But you can just tell these guys love playing with each other. They love being around each other, and you can tell that the culture and the foundation is laid, and you can just tell when they go out there, because even when the offense is not doing as well, the defense will pick them up, or the special teams will pick them up. And you can just tell that from all three phases of the football game that these guys are locked in, and they're out there having fun. They're out there having fun, and it shows – every time they take the grass that they're out there having fun and they're learning. You can tell they're still growing. You can see the growth from week one to yesterday, you know, from the things that they have gotten better at and the things they're working on. So I'm excited about the direction that this team is headed in. Of course, we got MG back. You know, I'm a huge Michael Gallup fan, you know, so seeing MG come back and also MG come back and continue doing MG things was very exciting to see yesterday.
Specifically with Cooper Rush, I think that's the storyline that everybody's talking about. Yeah. And specifically in 2013, you guys had a guy by the name of Kyle Orton as your backup. Yeah, yeah. And then at the end of the season, you know, Tony Romo gets hurt against Washington. Kyle Orton steps in, and he performed well against the Eagles. Unfortunately, the game didn't turn out the way Cowboys fans wanted. But talk about how important it is to have someone like an experienced backup at that position and how well Cooper Rush has played so far this season.
Yeah, I mean, I'll go further back. I'll go back to John Kitna. You know, if you look at it with Kit, you know, when Kit was able to step in, you know, and have that backer role to a starter and rip off wins, it's exciting. It's really encouraging to have. And it goes to the scouting department and the coaching staff to be able to grab a guy like Cooper Rush that JG beat the table for. And it was a lot of people say, I don't know JG. I don't know about Cooper Rush. So I think with all Cooper Rush success, we got to step out and say, JG, we got to give JG his flowers for believing in Cooper Rush. Because even when we let Cooper Rush go, JG was the first one to grab him in New York, you know, like, oh, Cooper, come here. So, and that's one thing about, and JG know it because JG was in that role. JG was in that role, okay? So when Aikman go down, okay, now JG's in that role. So he could kind of understand who Cooper Rush was. I don't know if it was the hair color or what, but again, he...
I love that.
He definitely believed in him, man. And you've seen it every day at practice, man. He would beat the tape when staff meetings for Cooper Rush. Again, you could just tell the chemistry that, you know, even when him coming out with Noah Brown, the reps that they would take at practice on scout team and things like that. So I'm excited to see Cooper Rush, his success and his accomplishment, because the kid's been working. He's been working his tail off since the moment he stepped in the league.
And I'm glad you brought up a guy like Noah Brown, because something that going into the season was very highly scrutinized was the wide receiver group. And them being so young and the lack of really a veteran presence, especially now that Michael Gallup's back, that changes the dynamic of things. But what have you seen so far from this wide receiver group and them being so young? Who do you feel like has the most potential to really have a successful year this year? You know, and really why? What have you seen so far from all of that?
Yeah, of course, Noah Brown, man. I think Noah Brown is just going to continue to grow. I think at the time when he first came to the league, kind of put him in a box of, okay, he's just a special teams guy or he's just an H-back type guy. They just can block. But when you throw the ball to the kid, he makes plays. And those are the same plays I've seen for 2 years at work, at practice, seeing the kid make over and over and over, and him just staying persistent, you know, battling through injuries, you know, staying persistent, staying resilient. And it's all paying off for him. I think I spoke on Twitter. I was like, oh, he's the next Cedric Wilson. You know, when Ced got in, Ced didn't have the big name or the glamour, but whenever Ced got in, he made impactful plays. And that's the same thing with Noah Brown. You know, Noah's not going to be a guy that's going to stand up and say, oh, demand me the ball, anything like that. He's going to be a great team player. He's going to continue doing everything he knew on special teams. And when his number is called, he's going to go make plays. So that's when I'm excited. I think Noah's one of the most exciting guys that I myself is looking forward to for him, just not only this year, but just in his future in the league, because he deserves it. You know, he's a guy that I said, a grinder. We call him alley dogs, man. Those special teams guys that are able to go ahead and find him a role on offensive defense. You know, one of the guys I was close to was Barry Church and Danny McRae. You know, those are two guys that came in and just grinded on special teams and then found a role on defense. So we kind of have a close spot in our heart for the guys that, for the special teamers, you know, that come out and carve them out a role on offense. So I think Noah Brown is one of the guys that I'm most excited for this season.
And talking about your position, I know specifically the running backs didn't have a historic day against the Commanders, but overall the hype around this group is real. I mean, you have someone like Zeke, Pollard, and Dowdle, even in the preseason, Malik Davis, like you're talking about these preseason guys. And you, back in 2012, it was you, Murray, and Felix Jones. So what have you seen from this running back group, and how awesome is it to see, you know, three guys step in that when one's out, they just it's like they don't miss a step?
Man, two words, Skip Pete. You know, Skip Pete was the guy that brought me into Dallas. You know, Skip Pete brought me to Dallas, and that running back room was me, Felix, Tashard Choice, DeMarco Murray. Then after that, it was Lance Dunbar came in that room. And also then Joseph Randall came in that room. And it was just what Skip Pete had already laid the foundation from the Marion Barber days, you know. So from MB, from that culture that Skip Pete laid the foundation in this room. You know, Skip Pete had the foundation GB came back with the same mindset in that room that we're in here together. It's not about who get the most carries. It's not about who does this. If it was DeMarco Murray playing, I just get in on third down roll. It was never any jealousy or enviness toward any of us. You know, we competed. We stuck together. It was a real close group, and it was because our leader. You know, and it's the same thing with Skip Pete. You know, that's why those guys are able to be so close together with the Zeke, the Pollards. And no matter how much the media try to separate those guys and bring strife between that running back room, Skip Pete is a guy that steps in and let those guys know, this is who we are, this is what we're going to do. It was the same thing when Skip was in with the Rams. And Anderson, when he came in and started ripping off runs, Skip does a really good job of managing his players in that room and having full control of his room. So I think with Skip Pete being there, that was a great asset to bring back to the Dallas Cowboys.
And so kind of switching gears to the defensive side of the ball, because there's one player you already know we're going to discuss, and that's Micah Parsons. And in your football career, and even just as, you know, a fan of the game your entire life, really, how often is it that you see a guy of the caliber that Micah Parsons is? I mean, he's just so impactful on the field, and his mindset, his focus, his determination, his flexibility, his versatility. There's just many things you can say about this guy. What have you seen from Micah, you know, last year and this year, and how do you think his career can really get any better? I mean, he's already in the talk for Defensive Player of the Year. I mean, this guy is incredible. What have you seen from Micah?
Oh, man. I've seen some from Micah I've never seen from a player, and I played with some really good players. Playing with DeMarcus Ware, you know, is one of the best to ever do it at that position. But I think what separates Micah is his flexibility, his position flex. You know, that's what really separates him. And watching guys like Aaron Donald, who is also, you know, arguably the best player in the game right now. But I think Micah does so much, and he's five positions in one. You know, anything you can ask for him. And Dan Quinn is doing a great job with being able to utilize him and get all those out of him. You know, when he first came in the league, he was like, okay, cool. Is he a stand-up backer, or should he play end? And he had a couple of plays against the great Tom Brady, and everybody, oh, well, maybe he's not a stand-up backer. But the kid was just, you know, he was just resilient. He just stayed at it, and he stayed to the course. And being with Dan Quinn and Dan Quinn pouring into him and really building that kid up, I've never seen anything like him. Everybody talk about comparing him to Lawrence Taylor. I never seen LT play. You know, but from what I'm hearing, you know, he's the closest thing, if not better. And then that's not taking anything away from LT. And even LT said it, I like to see what he looks like in the next 13 years. But again, Micah does so much. And when you go into him, it's only so much offense can do for a guy that, if he's at the end, we know this. But Micah's covering. He was covering slot receivers. You know, he's coming off the edge. He's blitzing in the A-gap. So he's definitely a nightmare.
And even with just the defense in general, how, when you're watching this team on a Sunday, do you have the urge to want to play with these guys? You know, you just get the sort of feeling that this group as a whole on defense is special, and that when an offense kind of hits a speed bump with, you know, Dak Prescott goes down, Cooper Rush steps in, how much, when a defense steps up and kind of carries the team, how much pressure does that take off an offense? You know, just say, hey, listen, if we make a mistake, or if there's a shank punt like happened on Sunday, you know, the defense is going to hold ground and they're not going to score any points.
Man, as much of an offensive guy I am, and, you know, I'll admit that defense sets the tempo on teams. You know, defense lays the bricks. They set the tempo. So, again, as an offense, when you know that even if we're not at our best, we're good, man, that's a wonderful feeling to have. Now, you know, we only got to go score two touchdowns, and we still going to be in this game to win it. That's a great feeling to have. Now, on the opposite side, you don't want to have to go and say, oh, we got to go score 40 points. If we got to score 40 points, that's a bad feeling to have as a team. But to go out and say, man, we scored 14 to 17 points, we'll win this football game, that's a great feeling to have. And offense is relaxing. It's easy to go out there from an offensive perspective, offensive player, offensive coach, knowing that whatever the case may be, the defense got our back.
Hey, something I did want to ask you was, from a player, you know, you have a different perspective of the game than fans do. And so if anything, you know, you're on Twitter, so you, you see how those fans react to things, and you've seen, you know, the quarterback conversation or alleged competition between Dak Prescott and Cooper Rush. What would your message be to fans who, you know, are maybe part of that conversation that should be non-existent, but it is? And talk about Dak Prescott specifically, the, I guess, the key aspects and the key things you see within him as a player, as a person, as a starting quarterback, and really how that role is so impactful for the rest of the team. And go into Dak. We haven't had a good Dak conversation, and I feel like you have a really good insight for why Dak is so important to this team.
Dak is important to this team for so many more things he does outside of between the hashes. The man he is in that locker room is who makes Dak Dak. And that team is behind Dak. Cooper Rush is behind Dak. You know, he loves Dak. Dak pours into Cooper. You know, again, that's another solid room. You know, if Cooper's biggest cheerleader right now is number four. You know, and that just goes to show the character of number four and what he does. He's a great leader now. He's a great leader. I haven't been around a better leader than Dak Prescott. You know, just the little things that Dak does before a game, at practice, something simple as before every game, Dak goes and daps up everybody on the grass. Coaches, players, trainers, everybody. And if you're not looking, he's going to get your attention just to speak to you before a game. So it's a little thing like that that Dak Prescott does that a lot of people doesn't see. And that's why that team, the organization is behind him. That's why I was either say, okay, cool, this is our guy. This is our guy going forward because he's earned it. You know, his leadership ability, his leadership characteristic, and then his play. You know, those guys get behind Dak Prescott and they play behind Dak Prescott, and he's the guy.
I was waiting. I was going to ask that question next. I'm happy Jess was able to get your perspective on it. The other thing, speaking of your coaching experience, Mike McCarthy came into the season on the hot seat. You know, not a lot of people were giving him a lot of credit for, you know, taking the team to the playoffs and not succeeding. And entering, you know, now this season where Dak Prescott gets hurt, everyone's like, that's it. You know, this is that it's all over for Mike McCarthy. What have you seen from this coaching staff, this resilience of not only from him, but someone like a Dan Quinn taking the load off of the offense from someone like Kellen Moore adjusting from week one to now week two, three, and four? What have you seen from the coaching staff from your perspective on that and how successful they've been able to be in this past like three game stretch?
Yeah, for one, that's just a nature of the Dallas Cowboys. You know, you come in, you win one game, you're going to win a Super Bowl. You lose the first game, yeah, you should be fired. You know, so that's just the nature of the beast. JG did it for over 10 years, had to deal with it. But again, one thing I see from this coaching staff is they're figuring it out. And that's what they're doing week to week is figuring things out. And that's why I say you can just see the growth of this team. You can also see that. I mean, yeah, he has great coordinators. And Kellen Moore and then Bones is one of the best in the business with special teams. You know, and then he has Dan Quinn. So he got pretty much it's four head coaches on that staff. You know, as four head coaches, so that makes things better. And this guy is not a big ego guy, you know. So that they're there, they work together well, and they're all good in their prospective coordinator spots. And I think that's what sets this coaching staff apart, you know, that they got guys that can figure it out. You know, of course, they have the weapons, and it always makes it easier. But it's a guy that figure it out. You know, my left guard go down. Oh, let's go sign this guy. You know, Tyron Smith goes down early. Let's go get this guy. And that's also kudos to the scouting department. I don't think there's any scouting department better than the Dallas Cowboys as far as how they mesh and how they connect and how the relationship they have with the coaching staff. So to see Will McClay in the box, you know, with a headset on, with Dan Quinn, you know, things like that is what kind of separates this coaching staff. And it's the idea of we're figuring it out, you know, putting our egos aside, we're going to go figure it out. We're going to figure out how to win ball games.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries, not including...
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It was always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
And so switching gears a little bit now, obviously the Cowboys coming off of a 3-streak win. I don't think anybody imagined that when Dak went down. It's kind of crazy. But, hey, they're playing the Rams next. Yeah. And I think this is a very tough part of the Cowboys' schedule that was already going to be tough pre-Dak injury, and especially now with Cooper Rush. And it's still a tough game no matter what. The Rams, obviously, a huge contender to make sure that the Cowboys don't win this game if they have any say in it. And so what do you think, based on what you saw on Sunday's game and what you've seen the past couple of weeks, do the Cowboys really need to hone in order to make themselves a contender to win this game? Because they're going in there the underdogs, and everybody knows that. They know that. The Rams know that. What do they have to key in on to make sure they come out with a win?
For one, ignore the noise. I think as a team going into this game, it's definitely a fact-finding mission, because whether we beat the Rams now, we'll still have to play them in January. So I think it's a fact-finding mission going out and just continue to establish our identity on defense, you know, and continue to find our way on offense. I don't think we have really just found our niche on offense. I think it's coming. You know, I think it's coming as far as red zone. I think that's an area of growth that we definitely got to have, is getting down the red zone and getting 7 instead of 3. But other than that, I wouldn't put too much into this game, you know, but of course the Cowboys fans are. But it's definitely, a fact-finding mission to figure out who are we against, you know, contenders. Because the biggest thing was, oh, we'll beat this team, but when it's time to play a big team, you know, we're going to drop the ball. We're not going to be successful. So I think just getting that monkey off our back and just going out and competing and playing Dallas Cowboys football and continue to establish our identity as being able to be physical, you know, and being a physical team, you got to be able to run the football. And going against the Rams, that's going to be tough to do. But we can go out and establish our identity and play physical football, run the football, win, lose, or draw. If we establish our identity and it's on display, I think it's a successful day.
And not even just the Rams, but you look at ahead another week and you have the Philadelphia Eagles coming up. And Mike McCarthy said last week that when you win these division games, it's almost like you're winning two games, because you're winning in your overall record and you're also winning it within the division. For me, what I've been sort of preaching and seeing is that it seems like that the kryptonite for Dallas's defense is a mobile quarterback and the up-tempo offense. And that's something that Eagles do really, really well, and that's their strength. So what's an area that they can improve on that you're kind of seeing where it might give them an opportunity to beat a team like the undefeated Philadelphia Eagles?
Yeah, as far as from the defensive side of the ball, is man, for right now, they're playing lights out on defense. Again, making the makeables, tackling. I personally think our run defense could be a little stiffer, you know, but because teams think that they can run the football against us. So just shoring that up on offense, and then, of course, continue doing what we do on offense, taking shots. I think with MG being back, we got a guy that can definitely go stretch the field and with the big play ability. So as he get his feet wet, get his feet back under him, I think with that, I think that's when the big plays are going to come on the offensive side of the ball. Because if you look at it, you look at MG and say, okay, cool, he had really three big plays, and I've counted those two pass interferences. You know, those two pass interferences are really big plays, and that just shows his big play ability, then, of course, his touchdown as well. So I think just those guys just continue building on what we've been building on. Everybody supporting Cooper Rush, still playing behind Cooper Rush, and running the football. Coming out running the football with Zeke and Tony Pollard and allowing those guys to do what they do best and not trying to make Zeke Pollard the Pollard Zeke.
I love that. I love that you mentioned that because that is so vital for Cowboys fans to hear sometimes. But all right, so we had you prepare your top 10 rankings for us. Yeah. And we do this every week here on the Writer's Block podcast because it's just so much fun. And Brandon and I like to throw a little bit of a curveball every now and then, and I may or may not have one for both of you. So Brandon, you already know how this goes. This is really your niche to announce all of this. So let us have it. Who are we announcing first?
Well, I have to start with an honorable mention of mine. I got to give some credit to Britt Brown. You know, he was able, and I know he's not a player, but, you know, the job he was able to do, not only to get Michael Gallup back, and I'm sure we'll all have him on a list somewhere, but Dalton Schultz came back from injury, Connor McGovern came back. These are all starters, and while Schultz didn't have the best statistical day, and McGovern struggled a little bit, you're asking these guys to come back off of injury and perform at an elite level. It's not an easy thing to do. So to see them come back, I give him a, you know, big round of applause. And when Michael Gallup scored that touchdown, it was awesome to see on the sidelines how his biggest cheerleader has been Britt Brown. They kind of gave each other like a big warm hug, and that was awesome to see. So Britt Brown's an honorable mention, but 10, 9, and 8 for me, I have Neville Gallimore. You know, he had a sack, and he actually improved from last week to this week. Run defense was a little bit of his weak spot against the Giants, but he stepped up, had a great game. Micah Parsons I put at 9, which a lot of people will probably give me a lot of flack for. But, you know, he was under a lot of double-team pressure yesterday, and the offense really kind of took him out of the game, which allowed other guys to step up, which will be higher on the list. But he's still applying pressure at an unbelievable rate, and he's still a catalyst and one of our writers for the blog and the Boys Network. He said that he's like gravity. He pulls all the players towards him. So for me, you have to put that on a top 10 list. And number 8, I have DeMarcus Lawrence. I mean, he won over 30% of his pass rush attempts. I mean, the guy's just been unstoppable for 2 weeks. So I got to give him his flowers too.
Ooh, I love that. Okay, so my number 10, I had MG13. Welcome back. We missed you so much. And I would have had him higher up, but I'm not going to penalize him for the small amount of reps that he had because I want him to, you know, ramp up as he feels comfortable physically to get back to his full set of reps. So I put him at 10 only for that reason. At number 9, I had Tank. You already mentioned. I mean, D-Law just being D-Law. I think we're seeing a very vintage form D-Law these last couple of weeks, and I am so excited to continue seeing him build upon that. I feel like he's the leader of this defense. He's the general, and I know that's Sean Lee, so don't get it twisted. I'm just saying he is the general of his soldiers within the defense, and he really takes that role serious. And I really think his presence is so impactful. And then I had Noah Brown next. And I know you're shocked he's so low. I know. I promise there's reason behind my madness. There's a little method here. But Noah Brown, I mean, just incredible. We go back to this guy's been on our list for the last couple of weeks we've been doing this. He's not anybody we expected to have on our list. And he's not anybody that anybody expected to perform like he is. And I think if you watched football from a smarter point of view, you knew he was a breakout star waiting to happen, right? So it hasn't been surprising, but it's been amazing to see how he grows and grows every single week. I mean, this guy continues to impress. So those are my next three. PT, who you have for 10, 9, and 8?
Oh, man, I got to go to my notes on my phone, and mine are totally different from you guys.
That's good.
That's what we like. So, we like to hear it.
At 10, I have Dante Fowler. You know, I have.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, I think that's guy that's making splashes and showing that he can really play on this level. So, again, especially with this team, especially what he showed yesterday. So, Dante Fowler is at number 10. Number 9, I got the punter now. You know, I got to have my special teams guys in there. You know, outside of the shank punt anger, man, he definitely flipped the field for Dallas. You know, when the offense wasn't rolling, you know your defense is good. So, when you got a punter that can flip the field for you, that's huge. You know, so anger. Then at 8, I got Diggs. And I have my reason for having Diggs so low. But, again, a lot of things that goes into play of why I have Diggs there, but then Diggs would be at number 8. So Dante Fowler, anger, and then Diggs at 8.
You mentioned Fowler. He's a guy that I had on my list originally, and you're right. He every week I think he deserves more and more reps. You know, and yeah. I understand that development is key, and Sam Williams deserves to get his fair share of reps. But for me, Dante Fowler has shown up and gotten better each and every week, and I think that him being a pass rush specialist, you know, it's important to get him on the field, especially if Mike is getting double teams. So I agree with you there. Diggs, I don't know. We'll get to that. but for me, when it comes to 7, 6, and 5, at 7 I have Deron Bland. I mean, this guy. Being a rookie, he was told in pregame, hey, listen, bud, Jordan Lewis is out. You're stepping in. And he took 0 snaps over the previous 3 weeks, and then he played 59 defensive snaps. So that was huge for me. And also, too, he got the interception, you know, towards the end of the game, which was huge. At 6, I have Brett Maher. The guy we've talked about him. Listen, we love ourselves some Dan Bailey. Jess and I, we're not only big Romo fans, but we're also big Dan Bailey fans. And Brett Maher is almost like you're putting Bailey in the rearview mirror. He's been the definition of consistency at the kicker position. And when he came in 2019, you know, and he just struggled. And everybody was like, man, this guy, he can't kick. But the second time's a charm, the guy's been an unstoppable force. He's 3rd in the NFL with 35 points, which is awesome. And I don't think anybody saw that coming. And then at 5, I have Michael Gallup. The task of him coming back from the ACL, I love the fact that last week when he felt like he wasn't ready, it was on his timeline. You know, there wasn't any pressure for him to play last week, get the risk of injury. He came in with the right mindset, and he just balled out. Like you mentioned earlier, the penalty yardage was huge, and that's something that's like those hidden yards where he's a deep threat, and, you know, you throw up that 50-50 ball, your guy's either going to catch it or you're going to get a penalty.
Yeah.
And that crew who was refereeing the game, they were one of the highest-rated you know, referee crews when it comes to calling pass interference calls. So, you know, it's something that probably the coaching staff saw and was like, hey, listen, we just need to take a shot here. They're probably going to call it. And they did twice. So those are the guys who I have for 7, 6, and 5. And on top of that, too, we don't like the Giants too much on here. Michael Gallup was, you know, recovering from an ACL injury and already has a touchdown. Kenny Galladay, unfortunately, doesn't have any. And I think he's just a victim of the system. But I just wanted to put that out there.
I love that. I love that. All right, 7. I believe we had the same number 7. I had Deron Bland as well. I mean, this guy, I loved his post-game interview. He talks about how he kind of blacked out and didn't even realize what had just happened when he had that interception. And I love that. That to me just shows how honed in he is on just trying to get the ball, right? So 7, I have Deron Bland. 6, I have Malik Hooker. I think Malik Hooker is somebody that has continuously shown us, even throughout preseason, that he is not a player that you want to sleep on by any means. I mean, he was continuing to put the pressure on during this entire game. When I tell you, I have about 6 pages worth of notes. I kept underlining Malik, Malik, Malik. And again, I just, the improvement from these guys is just incredible to me. And the growth that they're continuing to do when they're already producing is scary. Not for me, but for any offenses they have to face, obviously. And then 5, I had Micah Parsons. And Micah, you know, last week, we know he was dealing with a bit of a cold. He was a little sick. Still produce, right? It's Micah Parsons. He's still going to put on the pressure. But what I really liked about Micah this week is he just seemed 10 times more focused. And that says a lot for Micah Parsons. He was trying to eyeball Carson Wentz. I mean, you go back and you look at some of that film, a lot of these things that had happened, I mean, the interception, we'll talk about Diggs later on in my list, unlike PTs. But a lot of those things were able to happen because of the pressure that Micah is putting on and the versatility that he has between every single play. I mean, the Commanders did not know where he was going to be, and that was very obvious during this game. So I had Micah there at number five. PT, who you got?
All right, coming in at the next guy is D-Law. D-Law, I have D-Law at that that sixth spot. Let me see. Yep, no, not 10, 8, 7, 6. Yeah, D-Law is at six. Again, what he's doing in the run game is unbelievable now. We know who he is as a pass rusher, but he, as far as them stopping the run, he's a big reason for that. And then coming in at five, man, I got MG. Again, he came back in showing his big playability in that. You can tell that he was on a pitch count, you know, but the plays that he was in, he definitely made an impact. So I got MG at five. After at four, I got CeeDee Lamb. You know, CeeDee Lamb at four, he's really coming into it, catching the football, playing well, and giving us that spark that definitely we need at the receiver spot. So, again, I know folks that say, oh, man, why is CeeDee so low? But once you see my other guys, you'll understand why. So, again, I got Diggs, D-Law. Diggs. Diggs was at seven, so D-Law, MG, and then CD would be my next three.
See, I knew I liked you. For me, I had Michael Gallup at five, like I mentioned, and I have CD at four. You know, being able to play off of what happened last week and how everybody was, you know, dogging him for dropping that really catchable pass in the Giants game, but he came back, rebounded, and had an awesome game, had the touchdown. And then also, on Sunday, he had a great game. He had 97 yards, six catches, a touchdown. The guy is now forming into this number one role, and I don't think we're going to hear for the rest of the season any complaints about CeeDee Lamb. At three, I have Cooper Rush. The guy, he's, we mentioned the general. He's also like a general. He had, according to Next Gen Stats, a quarterback rating of 95.9. And I looked this up. It's higher than Aaron Rodgers and Kyler Murray. I don't think anybody saw that coming. And on top of that, I also looked up as well. Rodgers has a contract for 5 years worth $150 million. Kyler Murray signed a contract 5 years for $230 million. Cooper Rush, 1 year, just a little over $1 million. I mean, the guy's producing at an elite-type level. And while he's not getting the yardage or, you know, throwing eight touchdowns a game, I think we see a quarterback for Washington that's a liability when it comes to turning the ball over when it counts. And the fact that Rush, now he did throw two interceptions that were negated by penalties, but again, at the end of the day, that doesn't matter. He can improve in certain spots, and I think that that's one area where he's just trying to do too much. He threw off his back foot, so I won't dog him too much for that, but I just look at the guy, he doesn't turn the ball over, and that's something as a backup quarterback you really need to have, and he has it. And then at two, I have Donovan Wilson. The guy is playing at a Pro Bowl level. I spoke about it in the pre-halftime and post-game on the Twitter space for Blogging the Boys, and he finished the game with nine tackles, eight solo, and one that would have been a sack if Carson Wentz didn't escape. And, you know, last year, Curse led the Cowboys in the defense in tackles, and right now Donovan Wilson is doing that. And normally people would say, oh, when a safety leads the team in tackles, that means the running backs are getting to the second level. No, these guys want to get in the box. They want to tackle. These guys are not afraid of physicality. Donovan Wilson is an old school type player where he will hit you hard. I forget what player he hit, but he hit him like a missile. It was insane. So I got to give Donovan Wilson some love at number two.
Yeah. Okay. I think for the first time ever on this podcast, we all are in agreement for number four. I don't think that's happened yet. I don't think we've all been in agreement at any point. So PT, congratulations. we all matched at number four. I had CeeDee Lamb. And something that was really impressive was it was Dallas's third drive of the game. And he had three consecutive catches within that drive. And it was just like Cooper Rush was throwing the ball perfectly to him, a perfectly placed ball, a perfect catch. Those 3 yards, and mind you, this is Dallas's third drive in the first quarter, 56 yards That is amazing. And it just is a testament for if CD's going to get the ball, he's going to make a big play and he's not going to drop the ball. I mean, really, what I loved about his post game stuff from last week was he mentioned, I was so focused on it. I was so bothered by it. And Trayvon was talking to him saying like, it's okay. I got you. We're going to be okay. We're going to get through it. So CD's redemption, I mean, hey, see it. So I had CD at number four. Brandon, you and I actually have the exact same list at the top over here, it looks like.
We like it. We like
number
it.
Number three, I know, we've never done this before. CD, I had four. Cooper Rush, I had number three. And here's the thing. Cooper Rush is exactly what you need your backup quarterback to be. But I think also people forget about how long he's been around the Cowboys. And I think that's so important when you look at the success that he's having. And PT touched on this earlier. I mean, Cooper Rush has been around the scheme. He's been around the changes. He's been around every single thing, the highs and lows with all of these guys around him. He should be playing at this caliber. And if he wasn't, that would be an issue. He should be playing at the caliber he's playing, and his composure, his versatility as a quarterback to, you know, maybe not as great as a starting quarterback, right? But to sit there and call off the play and change the play, read it. He's even at one point, I was looking at one of the plays, he's in line at one point, and that it's just incredible his awareness as a quarterback. I mean, he's everything you need your backup to be. So I had Cooper Rush at number three. Number two, I had Donovan Wilson, because Donovan Wilson, oh my goodness, sir, I'm riding so hard on the Donovan Wilson train. I'm not mad at him for last week's penalty anymore, by the way. I would just like to clear that up. I'm no longer mad at any of them for penalties, because they only had four during this game. And really what you saw was the opposite of Washington really defeating themselves in terms of penalties. Washington had 11 penalties during this game, and in their first three games, they had 12 penalties in total. So to me, that shows the productivity of the Cowboys and how many of those they were actually getting them to call. An honorable mention for that was LVE. He was getting a lot of those offsides penalties called. It was pretty cool to see. So those are my next three. Who do we have next? Who is our number one, everybody? Or PT, you still have to give us your next ones, right?
Yeah, so I actually got to go 4-3-2. I got Donovan Wilson. When I say this is a kid that's I don't think how he's playing is surprising. I don't think it is. Like, watching his tape, I was able to sit down in the draft room. We was watching this guy, and one thing we said was, he's a physical ball player. I think the surprising part to the staff is when he got there was how much of a ball guy he was. Everywhere the football was, he was. He was a turnover machine. He was scooping fumbles. He was making interceptions. So I think that was one of the biggest things that jumped off as he got better and better as a player, because he can do it both. He can go play deep middle safety. He can come down to play in the box. So Donovan Wilson is at four. At three, I got Brett Maher. All right? I got Brett at three. And the reason why I got Brett at three is because when you can drive down and you still come out with points, that's paramount. Now, for him to put those points on the board consistently, that means a lot. And it gives a lot of confidence into that offensive coordinator as well as the defense, knowing that when Brett goes out there, he's points going to be on the board. It's going to be a point-producing unit. And then just a belief in him. Again, just a funny story. I was in that room making that decision, you know, of Brett over Dan Bailey. So as a special team coach on the staff at time, man, that was a big decision to make. And again, Brett didn't play as well as we wanted him to, but we knew what he had in him. And for Dallas, that scouting department is big time to be able to bring him back and the dividends that it's paying now. So I'm definitely happy to see Brett. To see Brett at number two. All right. So am I at number two now? Am I doing this right?
Yes, you are. Yeah.
Yeah. So at number two, I got Neville Gallimore at two.
Wow.
I got him.
That's
at
a surprise.
Two.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah. Why? Because for one, the Belly Boys never get much attention. Right. But what this guy is doing down there in the run game and pass game is creating chaos for offenses. You know, one thing as an offense, you want to make sure that your interior is secure, your A-gap and things like that. But what he's doing is really causing chaos, and he's such a gritty player, man. He reminds me of Big Woods, you know, when Woods came in and he was just a menace down there in the A-gap. And I think he has more pass rush ability than Wood had, but he's also in the run game, he's a force too. So seeing him down there just causing chaos in the A-gap and getting sacks and tackle for losses. So he's my guy for number two, Neville Gallimore.
You bring up Gallimore again. I know I had him lower on my list, but this is a guy where in the preseason, everybody on Twitter for Cowboys Nation was like, why is this guy playing in the second half of preseason games? And apparently the coaching staff wanted to see more because of the injury and everything. So he was almost like a guy on the outside looking in. But the fact is he came back and responded like what we talked about from the Giants game to on Sunday. And he's been, like you said, a consistent force. And he has a little bit more of a pass rush ability. He also reminds me a little bit of Malik Collins when he was here, too. You know, they kind of have like a similar build, pass rush ability. So you're right. The big boys need respect too. And I also want to mention, you know, on my number one, I'll get to it in a little bit, but also the offensive line. I think I didn't have anybody on my list on the offensive line, but they had a tough task with defending, the pass rush of the Washington Commanders. That is a tough unit to face. They have first round picks across the board, and those are good players. It's not like they're just throwing darts at the board and these first round picks aren't hitting. They are really, really good players. So I want to give them just a little bit of a shout out. Again, the big boys and Tyler Smith has, progressed significantly. So that's great to see. But my number one guy, I have Trayvon Diggs. The guy not only had an interception that was like a wide receiver running a route. He leads the league in pass breakups with 6. He's tied with the league lead in 2 interceptions. But on top of that, you know, Terry McLaurin got the contract. He's the guy in Washington. Held him to just 1 catch for 6 yards on 2 targets and 17 routes. The guy was just locked down on Sunday. So I have to give Trayvon Diggs credit. And on top of that, when we've talked about him before, he's developing into a well-rounded cornerback. You know, everybody, they were bringing up the stat again, and I don't want to hear that anymore, how he gives up the most yards of the NFL. To me, that does not matter. If you're going to take the ball away and you're going to be a defender and a willing tackler at the cornerback position, give up as many yards as you want, as long as it's not a touchdown for me. That's all that matters. And to see against the Bengals how he had that crucial stop on 3rd down, he's just developing into a well-rounded guy, and he's elevated his level of play. And when Dan Quinn was talking about these guys, he said Micah and Diggs have actually elevated their play this season. It's like, how much better can these guys get? Well, we're seeing it on the field, and Diggs was a shutdown guy on Sunday.
I don't think we've done this before. Again, Brandon, number one, I had Trayvon Diggs. Carson Wentz could not Diggs it. I mean, let's just call it what it is. And
well done.
And
well
you
done.
Love to see that. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I know I didn't create that, but that's just been my favorite. I had a running list last season of all the quarterbacks that could not Diggs it. I think I need to start that again this season. But you know what? I think something that obviously we saw Trayvon just being the absolute prime Trayvon, who his wide receiver background was really, really showing and shining through. But something that I wanted to note too was I think the key drive that changed the trajectory of this entire game was because of Trayvon Diggs. It was 4th and 15 in the fourth quarter. Mind you, Washington had the lead at this point of the game, and that pass breakup that he had in the end zone to avoid a touchdown situation that could have potentially gotten the Cowboys in a bit of a rut to have to come back from, he stopped that. And I think anytime you have a difference maker on your team that is going to make you feel more secure in a fourth down situation, I mean, that was a 4th and 15 for the Commanders that they had to go for. They almost had it, and had Trayvon not had the body awareness that he had where to bat that ball, that would have been an easy touchdown for them at that point. And so I think he obviously was just a difference maker. I think he changed the course of this entire game with how he was playing. So all the good things you said, Brandon, and then even more, because any quarterback that cannot Diggs it is just it's a good week when you have that. PT, who did you have at number one? I'm stumped.
Again, Trayvon Diggs is a great player. He's playing lights out. But again, I feel that he's able to breathe and be more comfortable when you know that number 11 is on the field. So my number one guy is Michael Parsons now. I think my other 9 guys reap the benefits of number 11. When number 11 is on the grass, he's what he demands from an offensive line, from offensive coordinators, the attention that he demands allows guys to be able to go out and just play freely. Diggs know that it's not going to be, the ball's got to come out fast. at some point the football is going to come out. That's why Diggs can play a little more aggressive. He can jump routes. He can do things like that because he know where he know Michael Parsons is in the game, and he's going to demand what he demand. Same thing with D-Law. Same thing with Gallimore. Same thing with all those Donovan Wilson. Those guys can come down and play more loose and more free, knowing the attention that 11 is going to demand. So even when 11 is not, per se, making the tackles, you know, if it's double teams, it's getting pressure, just getting collapsed in the pocket. And when quarterbacks see 11, when they feel 11, it's let me get the ball out as fast as I can because I know the guys in front of me is not going to be able to hold up much longer, you know. So, again, just being able to see him, the mental capacity, it's hard, let alone playing one position. But to be able to play three in one game, you know, it says a lot about a second-year player now. You know, this is just a second-year player to be able to go play both sides of the line, to be able to stand up inside, be able to stand up back, or to be able to go play the slot. For him to be able to lock those schemes in, and, again, like I always go back to week one last year when Tom Brady had him kind of like spinning it. He was just busting defensive plays. That guy, that's not him anymore. So for him to lock in and learn his defense, learn the best of defense, learn it from different positions, that's why he's definitely the number one for me. And then seeing him doing it yesterday just at a high level at every spot that he lined up at, and he's taking shots. You know, he's taking shots. People's chipping him, but he's still getting back up and playing at such a high level. It's just so physical, man. So number 11 is definitely my guy, Michael Parsons.
Jess, I think we're going to be losing our jobs here on the podcast because all the fans that we have are going to love PT's list over ours, keeping Parsons at number one. The one question before we end, I wanted to ask you, PT, is do you have a specific memory with either a player or a coach that you take with you throughout your career and now being a coach, whether it's working with Kitna, is it a JG moment, maybe a Sean Lee moment, anything that you look back on in your career and this is something that you carry with you every time you're coaching those kids in high school?
Oh, Jason Witten, you know, and it was so much about Witt. I remember I was in a training room one day. How Witt went about his day, I never told him when he was in the league, but I just watched him from afar. Everything that he did. When I first time I stepped in the league, he told me, make sure you're showing up on the right side of the tape every night when those coaches watch tape. I never knew what that meant until I start coaching. So when I started coaching, it was in the league, it was a constant evaluation. Every night we would watch tape and evaluate our players. And Witt would tell me, show up on the right side of that tape. Everything he did, I was in the training room for a hamstring. He told me, PT, if you can walk, you can run. And that's one of the toughest guys, went through the spleen, went through the broken jaw, just not going to miss games. One of the toughest guys to play the game. So just Jason Witten is when he told me, funny story. So before every game, before every practice, I'm like, how did this guy do it day in and day out, just at a relentless effort all the time? So I seen him throw a pill package in the trash can. So I went over in the training room, literally. I looked in the trash can to see what it was. It was two ibuprofen and two Advils. Every day after that, I took two ibuprofen and two Advils. Every day, you know, just if it worked for Witten, it was going to work for me. So just what he did for the game and how he was and how competitive he was, you know, just some of the memories of what he did and how he did it. That's the guy that I enjoy with playing the most, you know, and just being around the most because he was a top pick guy. But every year he came to training camp as if he was going to lose his job. You know, he was there in the offseason. He was there in the offseason with, you go and look in the weight room, it's me, Lance Dunbar, and Jason Witten. Me and Lance got to be in there. We were bubble guys, you know. But for Jason Witten to be around a program like that and pour into that program and then to even come back in that organization is truly remarkable. And I don't think it's a better guy that I play with that embodies the word grit, you know, in everything you do outside of Jason Witten. You know, even the arm sleeves, you know, I couldn't wear the sleeve, but I wore my tape high just so it'd be like Jason Witten. But that was the guy I looked up to the most and I admired the most as far as like how he went about his business, how he went about his day. Nothing was never too hard for Witt. You know, he was never going to come out the game. He was never going to be too tired. He just Mr. Reliable in everything that he did.
Well, you definitely just won all of us over. I mean, Brandon and I really have bonded in being the millennial kind of fans, right? So these are our guys. You're talking about all of our guys that really got us into football. And it's funny because you keep saying Witt, and my dog's name is Witt. So Witt's like, what's up? Like, what's going on? So, no, we love that. It's such a great thing when, you know, football becomes more than just a sport. And I think you embody that so perfectly. You're using your platform to give back to kids that essentially are our future. We appreciate that. And you're installing these incredible, incredible mindsets within them to be successful beyond the sport. And so I think what you're doing is absolutely incredible. I think you have such a incredible mind that we are so lucky to get to talk to you and be able to pick at that. So PT, you are welcome back on this podcast anytime you want to come and give us a power ranking. And, you know, we really appreciate you taking the time to come in and talk to us today. It's been incredible to hear everything you had to say.
No, I definitely appreciate it. Like I said, whenever you guys need me, I jump right back on. And we're under that 1 hour, too, so I'm excited, man.
Hey, well, where can the people find you if they want to see your fire tweets?
Because yeah, most definitely.
Fire.
Yeah, so on Twitter, man, I'm on there. I'm not going to do too much arguing, but I'll sit there and I have a respectful discourse.
I love it.
So, again, I'm at PTanner34 on Twitter. You know, that's my Twitter handle, at PTanner34.
Perfect. PT, thank you so much. Cowboys Nation, go enjoy the rest of your Victory Tuesday. Thank you for joining us for another episode of The Writer's Block. We'll see you next week.
Appreciate it.
Claude 3 from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point of the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skill and speed. And Haiku is the fastest and lowest-cost model on the market, perfectly designed for high-volume, high-speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who use Anthropic to navigate this new frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude, C-L-A-U-D-E, today. Jumpstart your genius with Claude 3 by Anthropic.
Support for this show comes from Vanta. Dealing with loads of spreadsheets, juggling different tools, and having to do manual security checks, it can be a headache to keep up with today's compliance and security programs. Vanta is the trust management platform that wants to simplify things and bring all your trust-building efforts under one roof, making growth smoother for your whole organization. Vanta lets you automate up to 90% of compliance for SOC 2, ISO 27001, HIPAA, and more. Strengthen security posture and reduce third-party risk. Get $1,000 off Vanta when you go to vanta.com/vox. That's VANTA.com/vox for $1,000 off Vanta.